say, hurry boy, it's waiting there for you. Welcome to Clubhouse Radio, live from the Catskill Youth Clubhouse on 90.7 FM WGXC, broadcasting Acre, Catskill, and Hudson. That was Africa by Toto. We're here in front of our studio audience, preparing to bring you our town, our truth, environmental justice. We'll kick off our show after the local news and weather. Stay tuned.
I seek to cure what's deep inside. Frightened of this thing that I've become.
The WGXC Newsroom. This is the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. I'm Philip Grant. Amelia Teasdale reports in the Columbia paper that Matthew Nelson was elected board president and John Antelec vice president at the July 9th Ichabod Crane School Board organizational meeting. New board member Elizabeth Phillips and interim superintendent Lee Bordick were also sworn in at the meeting, but the vote for president was the news of the night. Board member Jeffrey Ouellette was the only vote against Nelson, and Antelec was elected without opposition. Nelson is also the chair of the Town of Kinderhook Democratic Committee, and Ouellette alleges that the Town of Kinderhook Democrats' Facebook page reported misinformation about him and his family. Ouellette said, refuting a Facebook post which has since been taken down, and I quote, "I did graduate from the district," end quote. He also said his daughter attended the school district until eighth grade, but admitted she did attend a private school for high school, calling that a, and I quote, "personal decision," end quote. Read more about this story in the Columbia paper. Mallory Monet reports in the Albany Times-Union that a local immigrant advocate group is preparing for nationwide arrest July 14th from the U.S. Immigration and Customs Enforcement Office. On July 11th, the New York Times reported that ICE officials would target at least 2,000 undocumented immigrants with deportation orders beginning July 14th. Last month, President Donald Trump promised other raids that never occurred. Brian McCormack, director of Columbia County Sanctuary Movement, said, and I quote, "Our community has faced increased and more aggressive immigration enforcement activities since the beginning of the Trump administration, and our community has responded with resilience. Our organization will continue to expand our Know Your Rights and Rapid Response and Organizing program to support and defend our community," end quote. McCormack has been training others locally to find out whether ICE officers have just an administrative warrant signed by an ICE official or a more powerful judicial warrant signed by a judge. The administrative warrant does not allow ICE officials to enter private property. Columbia County Sanctuary Movement members have a rapid response team that uses a mass text system, assesses how any arrest is conducted, supports the affected family, and locates the individual detained to connect them with legal services. McCormack said, and I quote, "Although terrifying, it was a positive effect on our motivation to organize Know Your Rights training to access that information," end quote. Read more about this story in the Albany Times-Union. Nick Reisman reports at New York State of Politics that New York property tax levy increases will remain at the rate of inflation or 2% or less for the 2020 fiscal year, whichever is lower. Comptroller Tom DiNapoli's office made the announcement July 11th. DiNapoli said in a statement, and I quote, "The allowable levy growth will be 2% for the second year in a row. However, mixed economic signals may require local governments to respond to changing financial conditions. Local officials should remain vigilant when crafting their budgets," end quote. Read more about this story at New York State of Politics. Joseph Spector reports for the Poughkeepsie Journal that the Public Service Commission finalized a settlement with Charter Spectrum July 11, allowing the cable and broadband company to continue working in New York. The State Public Service Commission voted 3-1 for a deal in April, which was approved July 11. Public Service Commission Acting General Counsel John Sipos said, and I quote, "With the 2019 settlement agreement and today's order, from my perspective, the public interest of New Yorkers are in a materially better place today than things stood a year ago," end quote. Last year, New York threatened to kick Charter out of New York if it didn't improve its broadband services, particularly in rural and underprivileged parts of the state, as promised. Now the company has more promises, including doubling its investment in upstate New York, which in 2016 was estimated at $305 million. That projects broadband services to an additional 145,000 residents and businesses in upstate New York by September 30, 2021, and then Charter will spend $12 million more for an additional 45,000 upstate addresses. Read more about this story at the Poughkeepsie Journal. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio Daily News. Local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information. Use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend. And now here is your WGXC Hands-On Radio weather report. The National Weather Service in Albany is forecasting a partly sunny day for today with a temperature high near 83 degrees and a northwest wind at 6 to 10 miles an hour. It will be mostly clear tonight with a temperature low of around 63 degrees and a northwest wind at 5 to 8 miles an hour. Your forecast for the weekend. Well, on Saturday, sunny with a high near 88 degrees. Saturday night, partly cloudy with a low around 65. And on Sunday, sunny with a high near 82 degrees. Sunday night mostly clear with a low around 59. So there you have your weather report brought to you by WGXC 90.7 FM. Radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Hilo Catskill, cafe, bar, art gallery, and performance space located at 365 Main Street, Catskill, New York. Waveform's WGXC is pleased to broadcast live from Hilo every Tuesday morning starting at 9 a.m. In addition, Hilo live events are streamed and broadcast in conjunction with the Waveform Radio Transmit Partner Program.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Melissa Alftermar and Tony Stone of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only 4 degrees. It's only 4 degrees, it's only
4 Degrees by Anon. Welcome back to Clubhouse Radio presenting 1 hour of Our Town, Our Truth, Environmental Justice. I'm Emily, and I'm here with
AJ
and Thebes.
Today, our sound engineers are Shahi and Kingston. All views expressed on Clubhouse Radio are our truth and may not represent the views and opinions of the Clubhouse's parent organization, the Mental Health Association of Columbia Green.
This is Phoebes. We were just listening to Anoni, 4 Degrees, and I asked for us to kind of kick off the show with that song, which is one that it's actually been really cathartic for me in kind of grappling with climate change and sort of this way in which, as a musician, they're sort of just like really starkly laying it out. It's like, oh, it's just 4 degrees. Like, I want to see the world burn. I want to watch the lemurs die. I want to see the mammals die. And like really speaking to just like the grave, intense, emotional, visceral reality of what it means to watch our earth dying, right? Like to know that things are dying on our earth and that that's part of what this like abstract idea of what climate change is about. And so it's like starting in that home base. But
there are so many musicians nowadays that are talking about this, and they've given their views and expressed their feelings, but I don't think anything else is going to change until the people that can do something about it. Like, we can do something about it as a whole, like a community and as a whole, but unless like the higher ups are doing something about it, I don't really think that much will change.
And that's what our show is about today. Environmental justice, our town, our truth, looking at what it is that we're talking about around environmental justice and climate change and what can we do about it as individual people, as communities, as a country. So, yeah, Emily, so excited that you're on the show talking about environmental justice. You've been talking about this topic for weeks. Glad to be here.
I'm very glad to be here.
Yeah.
Environmental justice is one of my favorite topics to talk about.
And you brought in a bunch of cool educational materials for us.
Mm-hmm. I did. I brought in a few TED Talks to listen to and talk about.
Yeah.
Cool. So I know one of those first TED Talks is kind of an introduction to what climate change means, right?
Right.
It's basically like the science part of it.
Yeah, it explains like what it is and how it like breaks it down a little bit for you, so that should be interesting.
Well, so let's give that a listen to start, right? Give
let's
everyone
get it.
Ourselves, our readers, an orientation to what that
skirt,
is.
Skirt.
I'd like to talk to you today about the scale of the scientific effort that goes into making the headlines you see in the paper. Headlines that look like this when they have to do with climate change, and headlines that look like this when they have to do with air quality or smog. They're both two branches of the same field of atmospheric science. Recently, the headlines looked like this when the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC, put out their report on the state of understanding of the atmospheric system. That report was written by 620 scientists from 40 countries. They wrote almost 1,000 pages on the topic. And all of those pages were reviewed by another 400-plus scientists and reviewers from 113 countries. It's a big community. It's such a big community, in fact, that our annual gathering is the largest scientific meeting in the world. Over 15,000 scientists go to San Francisco every year for that. And every one of those scientists is in a research group, and every research group studies a wide variety of topics. For us at Cambridge, it's as varied as the El Niño oscillation, which affects weather and climate, to the assimilation of satellite data, to emissions from crops that produce biofuels, which is what I happen to study. And in each one of these research areas, of which there are even more, there are PhD students like me, and we study incredibly narrow topics, things as narrow as a few processes or a few molecules. And one of the molecules I study is called isoprene, which is here. It's a small organic molecule, probably never heard of it. The weight of a paperclip is approximately equal to 900 zeta illion, 10 to the 21st, molecules of isoprene. But despite its very small weight, enough of it is emitted into the atmosphere every year to equal the weight of all the people on the planet. It's a huge amount of stuff. It's equal to the weight of methane. And because it's so much stuff, it's really important for the atmospheric system. Because it's important for the atmospheric system, we go to all lengths to study this thing. We blow it up and look at the pieces. This is the U4 smog chamber in Spain. Atmospheric explosions or full combustion takes about 15,000 times longer than what happens in your car. But still, we look at the pieces. We run enormous models on supercomputers. This is what I happen to do. Our models have hundreds of thousands of grid boxes calculating hundreds of variables each on minute timescales. And it takes weeks to perform our integrations. And we perform dozens of integrations in order to understand what's happening. We also fly all over the world looking for this thing. I recently joined a field campaign in Malaysia. There are others. We found a global atmospheric watchtower there in the middle of the rainforest and hung hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of scientific equipment off this tower to look for isoprene and, of course, other things while we were there. This is the tower in the middle of the rainforest from above, and this is the tower from below. And on part of that field campaign, we even brought an aircraft with us. And this plane, the model BA-146, which is run by FAM, normally flies 120 to 130 people. So maybe you took a similar aircraft to get here today. But we didn't just fly it. We were flying it 100 meters above the top of the canopy to measure this molecule. Incredibly dangerous stuff. We have to fly on a special incline in order to make the measurements. We hire military and test pilots to do the maneuvering. We have to get special flight clearance. And as you come around the banks in these valleys, the forces can get up to 2 Gs. And the scientists have to be completely harnessed in order to make measurements while they're on board. So as you can imagine, the inside of this aircraft doesn't look like any plane you would take on vacation. It's a flying laboratory that we took to make measurements in the region of this molecule. We do all of this to understand the chemistry of one molecule. And when one student like me has some sort of inclination or understanding about that molecule, they write one scientific paper on the subject. And out of that field campaign, we'll probably get a few dozen papers on a few dozen processes or molecules. And as a body of knowledge builds up, it will form one subsection or one sub-subsection of an assessment like the IPCC, although we have others. And each one of the 11 chapters of the IPCC has 6 to 10 subsections. So you can imagine the scale of the effort. In each one of those assessments that we write, we always tag on a summary. And the summary is written for a non-scientific audience. And we hand that summary to journalists and policymakers in order to make headlines like these. Thank you very much.
Cool. So, Emily, you picked that video video out, and it's a conversation about somebody who does like a very specific type of molecular scientific research that ties mm-hmm. into the larger understanding of what climate change is. What stood out for you about that video? What does that show us about things?
Well, it shows us that like something so simple can lead to like a lot more issues.
Right, I mean, you know, she's describing this one very mm-hmm. complex process and saying there's like 6,000 scientists doing right. things of this nature that adds up to the whole body of research mm-hmm. that tells us we have a climate problem.
Right, yeah. So she's just like, she basically is giving us the facts, but she's also like telling it like it is in a sort of way, because she's like, listen, there's these many group of scientists from this place, but they're all working towards one cause. They're all telling you the same problem
mm-hmm.
in different ways.
And it speaks to me, like, this idea that there's some sort of, like, conspiracy out there mm-hmm. of, like, everyone, like, making this thing up around climate change. It's like, these scientists are not part of, like a big conspiracy. Like, they're individual scientists, and they're very right. special subsets of work looking at whether it's atmospheric molecules in this case or oceanic levels of toxins or whatever. Mm-hmm. But it keeps mm-hmm. adding up to this whole story that says we have a climate problem.
Right. And it's just not, I don't even know how to say it, but it's not like, oh, this group of scientists is working for these people, and these people believe in that. It's nothing like that. It's all adding up. And if you think about it, what's going on? Because if you're distracting yourself, like, I don't even want to be like that, but, like, if you're not thinking about, like, the environment, and you just go, like, day to day, like, think about the future, man, and it's going to add up, and it's already a problem. Like,
mm-hmm.
what are you going to do?
Yeah.
There's going to be nothing you can do to stop it soon.
And yet some people still think global warming and climate change is a fake issue.
It's a mm-hmm. joke.
Yeah, so kind of like cutting through that and getting to the, you know, I think we're all starting our show from sort of the baseline understanding of like, this is real. There's like very well documented research that the contributions of human activity through the industrial age have led to changes in the atmospheric makeup of our planet, such that it's heating up, right? It's getting a little warmer. Ice caps are melting. Sea levels are rising. That's changing the larger atmospheric situation around the globe, which creates more storms, more hurricanes, more tornadoes, more snowstorms. So you get more extreme weather as a result of what is just simply a change in the balance point of what our atmosphere has been made out of for thousands and thousands of years. And this is about the seventh time in the last 650,000 years we've seen such a significant climate change. So it's a special event. It's not just a normal, oh, every 100 years things change.
Right. Like, you know. No, it's a significant fact that needs to be looked at and taken seriously, and people are joking around about it. And one day there's going to be nothing you can do about it because people just don't listen.
Yeah, and we're going to listen to a clip later on about that piece. And that there was a big report that came out from the UN maybe a year ago or in the last year. It was recent, that talked about 12 years kind of being the time frame that humans have to really significantly change the course of how we do the economy, how we do industry, how we live, right? Our shipping industry, our clear cutting and forestry industry, our travel industry, even our food industry, all these different ways that we are producing a ton and ton of carbon into the atmosphere. Those things need 12 years to get that into check before we're dealing with basically the tipping point. And the tipping point these scientists are talking about
is an apocalypse.
Yeah, being unable to change the kind of massive, you know, environmental changes that will come about from rising sea levels. And rising sea levels is really, you're talking about massive displacement of humans. And so you're talking about mass migration and lots of other things that can start to happen and are already happening, you know. And we've been living under environmental crisis for a long time. I think, like, the communities who get most impacted first are often the last ones who get heard about, you know, and, like, that's a problem in this. And I know the next clip talks a little bit about how economic injustice plays into climate stuff too, right?
I feel like one day it's going to be that one company and it's the last straw on the camel's back, and the next thing you know, there's nothing we can do. So I say, unless Emily has something else to say, we get into the next clip and we figure it out.
I say we go into the next clip.
High five.
I am honored to be here, and I'm honored to talk about this topic, which I think is of grave importance. We've been talking a lot about the horrific impacts of plastic on the planet and on other species, but plastic hurts people too, especially poor people. And both in the production of plastic, the use of plastic, and the disposal of plastic, the people who have the bullseye on their foreheads are poor people. People got very upset when the BP oil spill happened, for very good reason. People thought about, oh my God, this is terrible, this oil, it's in the water, it's going to destroy the living systems there, people are going to be hurt, this is a terrible thing, that this oil is going to hurt the people in the Gulf. What people don't think about is, what if the oil had made it safely to shore? What if the oil had actually got where it was trying to go? Not only would it have been burned in engines and added to global warming, but there's a place called Cancer Alley. And the reason it's called Cancer Alley is because the petrochemical industry takes that oil and turns it into plastic, and in the process kills people. It shortens the lives of the people who live there in the Gulf. So oil and petrochemicals are not just a problem when there's a spill, there's a problem when there's not. And what we don't often appreciate is the price that poor people pay for us to have these disposable products. The other thing we often don't appreciate is it's not just at the point of production that poor people suffer. Poor people also suffer at the point of use. Those of us who are in a certain income level, we have something called choice. The reason you want to work hard and have a job and not be poor and broke is so you can have choices, economic choices. We actually get a chance to choose not to use products that have dangerous, poisonous plastic in them. Other people who are poor don't have those choices. So low-income people often are the ones who are buying the products that have those dangerous chemicals in them that their children are using. Those are the people who wind up actually ingesting a disproportionate amount of this poisonous plastic and using it. People say, well, they should just, you know, buy a different product. Well, the problem with being poor is you don't.
Yeah. Who's a really powerful political commentator and analysis of a lot of social justice issues. I appreciate that you picked Van Jones to talk about this intersection of environmental and social justice.
This clip really spoke to me because, like, he made a point that it's not just, like, when oil is, like, harming, like, the water itself, like, at that moment, but, like, it's actually more harmful when it's, like, used correctly or, like, in the way it was intended for.
Right. It's like, you know, yeah, people are like, oh, everything we're doing is okay as long as we, like, we have really good pipelines that never spill, right? Or, like, but it's like, no, actually, when everything's working exactly the way you want it to, it's still extraordinarily dangerous for people.
Exactly.
And there's kind of a lack of acknowledgement of just, like, the fundamental way industries have set themselves up to produce goods is, it's sick, making people really sick, and has been for a long time. Like,
it's all about the money to them. They don't really care. As long as they've got that money and they're sitting high and mighty, the rest of the world can perish for all they care.
Right.
And so, as you can see, he's very serious. Like, get it together.
Yeah.
And it's not only about, like, the production of it. It's like the plastic
distribution of it.
Yeah, and that, like, literally carcinogenic, right? Mm-hmm. That's the word, like, for something that can cause cancer. Carcinogenic chemicals are being used in, we have oil, everything is an oil-based product, right? Mm-hmm. Like, we don't even know sometimes how much oil the things we use in our lives are made out of. We've been getting exposed to this for, like, decades now. And, like, we don't even, like, we've taken for granted kind of a baseline level of health. Mm-hmm. That's pretty sick, I think, because we've been around these chemicals now for 80 years.
It's probably just, like, built into the background. And when I say that, it's, like, something you unconsciously don't think about. Like, oh, I brushed my teeth this morning. It becomes one of those, like,
traditional.
Yeah, that's what I mean to say. It's, like, just, it's, like, a thought. Like, after, unless somebody really, like, brings it to your attention, you're just going to be, like, oh, yeah, I did brush my hair. Like, it's just something, like, you would say.
Yeah.
Which makes those patterns and behaviors hard to change, you know? Mm-hmm. One of the things I really appreciated about this video is, like, this raising this issue of, because I think a lot of times environmental justice conversations get really stunted and stopped out at, like, so everyone, like, stop using plastic and that'll save our problem. So I really appreciated, too, how he's like, well, actually, these companies are set up to target particular communities who don't have the choice to wean themselves off of certain products and plastics and things like that, you know? So there's something really kind of unjust in some ways in saying, like, everyone needs to change their behavior versus saying there's a system with people in control of it who are intentionally targeting
these
people
things.
And they need to be responsible for shifting this.
True. I mean, not everyone is as well fed and has as much technology and is as advanced as America. And then, like, there's little, like, countries and villages all over the world. And so not all of them can be like, okay, we'll stop using this.
And those folks aren't the problem. Like, America makes up 5% of the population and uses 25% of the plastics that are in the world. So it's not, like, your villages, like, around the world that are causing it. It's, you know, this sort of, again, it's like that taken for granted, like, almost, like, celebrated mainstream economic culture that's America is, sort of, like, we're afraid to challenge that in some ways.
I feel like we put ourselves on the assembly line. It's just, like, one after the other. Okay, next American.
Yeah, so. All right, well, we're going to transition our segment into thinking about how do we go from the problem into the solution. We're going to take a break, catch the news update, and then we'll come back around with some more information for our listeners. So stay tuned. 90.7 WGXC, Clubhouse Radio, Our Town, Our Truth, Environmental Justice.
Let's get it. Let's go.
At least those in favor. And if we don't meet before I leave, I hope I'll see you later. Once I was 20 years old, my story got told. I was written about everything I saw before me. Once I was 20 years old. Soon we'll be 30 years old. Our songs have been sold. We've traveled around the world and we're still roaming. Soon we'll be 30 years old. I'm still learning.
learning about life. My woman brought children for me, so I can sing them all my songs and I can tell them stories. Most of my boys are with me, some are still out seeking glory, and some I had to leave behind. My brother, I'm still savvy, soon I'll be 60 years old. My daddy got 61, remember life, and then your life becomes a better one. I made a man so happy when I wrote a letter once. I hope my children come and visit once or twice a month. Soon I'll be 60 years old. Will I think the world is cold? Or will I have a lot of children who can bore me? Soon I'll be 60 years old. Soon I'll be 60 years old. Will I think the world is cold? Or will I have a lot of children who can bore me? Soon I'll be 60 years old. Once I was 7 years old, Mama told me, go make yourself some friends or you'll be lonely. Once I was 7 years old.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Sarah Tapton is reporting for Columbia Green Media. Community members turned out June 9th to voice their opinions about the proposed Green Suites Resort in Jefferson Heights. The Catskill Planning Board is currently considering the developer's application for the special use permit needed for the four-story, 48-unit hotel at the Catskill Golf Course to get built. The project was temporarily halted while the parties discussed how to increase water pressure to handle the new building safely. Attendees at the meeting raised concerns about potential changes to the street landscape, parking, increased traffic, the size of the building, and the possibility of guests trespassing on neighboring properties. Planning Board Chairman Joseph Izzo said the board did not anticipate any traffic issue. Izzo said the board will ask the town to install no parking signs along Brooks Lane. In the off-season, the hotel will work in partnership with Wyndham Mountain and may also offer cross-country skiing on the golf course. The developers hope to break ground on the hotel next spring. The planning board found there would be no adverse effects on the environment caused by the project and voted to close the public hearing. The board now has 62 days to decide on the special use permit. Read the full story at HudsonValley360.com. Bethany Bump is reporting for the Times Union. State and local health departments are investigating an outbreak of cyclosporiasis in the capital region. The gastrointestinal illness can spread through contaminated food and water and has been confirmed in 11 people so far. Several of the patients reported eating at the Italian-American Community Center in Albany, Prime Life Restaurant at the Beltrone Senior Living Community Center in Colony, and a private buffet held at Union College in Schenectady. Outbreaks of cyclosporiasis in the U.S. are often associated with imported fresh produce that have been contaminated with a fecal parasite. Officials said there is no indication the parasite was spread by poor food handling or preparation locally. Instead, the contamination may have occurred prior to arrival at food distribution centers and restaurants, and it is not easily removed by standard rinsing. Additional dining establishments may be identified as the investigation continues. Symptoms of cyclosporiasis appear approximately 1 to 2 weeks after ingestion. They include severe diarrhea, loss of appetite, weight loss, stomach cramps, bloating, nausea, and fatigue. If left untreated, the symptoms can last a month or longer and can return one or more times. State health officials say they are closely monitoring an increase in cyclosporiasis cases statewide and nationally. John Campbell and Joseph Spector are reporting for iHUD.com. The New York State Police has declined to charge Robert Freeman after photos of nude and scantily clad women were found on his work computer. Police spokesperson Deanna Cohen said July 11th, the agency closed its investigation into the former Committee on Open Government Executive Director's use of his work computer and did not charge him. Freeman 72, the state's in-house advocate for government transparency, was fired June 24th after Inspector General Letizia Tagliaferro found he acted in a, and I quote, sexually inappropriate manner, end quote, toward a reporter who sought his professional advice on the state open meetings law. The Westchester County District Attorney's Office, which investigated the meeting with the reporter, ultimately declined to bring charges against Freeman. However, as the state police ends its investigation, Tagliaferro's investigation appears to be expanding. At least four women who say Freeman harassed them have been contacted in recent weeks as the Inspector General's office continues to examine his conduct during his 43-year career in state government. Read the full story at LoHUD.com. Kate Lisa is reporting for Capital Region Independent Media. The Village of Ravenna's annual end of the summer celebration will not be held this year. Instead, the village will join with VFW Post number 9594 to host the Village and Veterans Fall Festival on September 28th. The festival will take place at Mosher Park, beginning with food, games, music, and other family-friendly activities in the afternoon, and end with fireworks at night. Times and other details will be announced at a later date. The Friendship Festival is traditionally held on the last Saturday of August, but this year it falls on Labor Day weekend. Ravenna Mayor William Miskiraka said in a statement, and I quote, "This has happened in the past. The very low turnout that year was a result of this conflict and was not fair for vendors and residents alike," end quote. Ms. Giraca said other factors in the decision to postpone was a lack of volunteers and a loss of the festival coordinator who stepped down for work-related reasons. The mayor said a bigger, better friendship festival will be held in 2020. He said, and I quote, "Next year we will have some big stuff in the works for the Friendship Festival that will knock your socks off, guaranteed. But we desperately need volunteers if anyone wants to help," end quote. Read the full story at RavennaNews.com. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a nice weekend.
I just wanna stay in the sun where I find. I know it's hard sometimes. Pieces of peace in the sun's peace of mind. I know it's hard sometimes. Yeah, I think about the end just way too much. But it's fun to fantasize on my enemies who wouldn't wish who I was. But it's fun to fantasize. Oh, 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 oh. I'm falling, so I'm taking my time on my ride. Oh, 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 I'm falling, so I'm taking my time on my ride.
Welcome back to Clubhouse Radio, live from the Catskill Youth Clubhouse on 90.7 FM WGXC, broadcasting Accra from Catskill and Hudson. You are just listening to Ride by 21 Pilots. We are here. We're dabbing. We're not dabbing.
About climate change.
We should be whipping. Anyway.
I'm talking about apocalypse.
I want to be in an apocalypse, but then again, I don't.
Talking about the possibility of actually being in an apocalypse.
The possibility of an apocalypse scares the living daylights out of me.
This feels like
image. The image of an apocalypse with leather jackets and zombies, now that's not too bad. But think about it. Do you, as a person, really think you're fit enough for an apocalypse?
Yo, when you really think about it and take stock, I'm like, nah, I don't think I'm ready.
Like,
leather jacket
head,
aside.
Like, my Fortnite character might be, like, got knives and guns, but I don't. Like,
yeah.
I'm a normal person. In real life, you don't get three tries. You don't get, like, eight hearts on your, like, level. You don't get to level up. You die.
Technically, you get to level up with your birth.
Oh, yeah.
Leveling up is like getting older, so that's your birthday. You level up each birthday.
But what if
that's your checkpoint?
But like at the point, at this point, who's gonna be keeping track of the date? You won't even be able to use your phone.
Mm-hmm.
All the electricity will be out.
Right.
You'll be an old person, and you'll get eaten by a zombie. Stop climate change, people.
So with that, we're going to play a little clip from Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is a freshman, a U.S. representative in the House, U.S. Congress, woman of Puerto Rican descent, who has been a powerful advocate for getting us to this point where we can both accept the reality that it's a little bit of an apocalypse situation and also not totally go into panic. I'm going to pretend that my life's on Fortnite and not actually face reality, right? So what would it look like?
Seems like something I would do.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think this is why big companies made those virtual reality goggles, because one day they're going to wish they can go back to 2018.
Right. Yeah. So this video is called A Message for the Future, and it's meant to inspire the sort of forward-looking visioning that allows us to feel like we don't have to feel helpless in the face of apocalyptic climate change. So let's listen to AOC.
Get yourself.
And in the next year, when I was elected to Congress, the world's leading climate scientists declared another emergency. They told us that we had 12 years left to cut our emissions in half, or hundreds of millions of people would be more likely to face food and water shortages, poverty, and death. 12 years to change everything. How we got around, how we fed ourselves, how we made our stuff, how we lived and worked, everything. The only way to do it was to transform our economy, which we already knew was broken, since the vast majority of wealth was going to just a small handful of people, and most folks were falling further and further behind. It was a true turning point. Lots of people gave up. They said we were doomed. But some of us remembered that as a nation, we'd been in peril before. The Great Depression, World War II. We knew from our history how to pull together to overcome impossible odds. And at the very least, we owed it to our children to try. The wave began when Democrats took back the House in 2018, and then the Senate and the White House in 2020, and launched the decade of the Green New Deal, a flurry of legislation that kicked off our social and ecological transformation to save the planet. It was the kind of swing-for-the-fence ambition we needed. Finally, we were entertaining solutions on the scale of the crises we faced without leaving anyone behind. That included Medicare for All, the most popular social program in American history. We also introduced the Federal Jobs Guarantee, a public option including dignified living wages for work. Funnily enough, the biggest problem in those early years was a labor shortage. We were building a national smart grid, retrofitting every building in America, putting trains like this one all across the country. We needed more workers. That group of kids from my neighborhood were right in the middle of it all, especially this one girl, Ileana. Her first job out of college was with AmeriCorps Climate, restoring wetlands and bayous in coastal Louisiana. Most of her friends were in her union, including some oil workers in transition. They took apart old pipelines and got to work planting mangroves with the same salary and benefits. Of course, when it came to healing the land, we had huge gaps in our knowledge. Luckily, indigenous communities offered generational expertise to help guide the way. Ileana got restless, tried her hand as a solar plant engineer for a while, but eventually made her career in raising the next generation as part of the Universal Child Care Initiative. As it turns out, caring for others is valuable, low-carbon work, and we started paying real money to folks like teachers, domestic workers, and home health aides. Those were years of massive change, and not all of it was good. When Hurricane Sheldon hit southern Florida, parts of Miami went underwater for the last time. But as we battled the floods, fires, and droughts, we knew how lucky we were to have started acting when we did. And we didn't just change the infrastructure. We changed how we did things. We became a society that was not only modern and wealthy, but dignified and humane, too. By committing to universal rights like healthcare and meaningful work for all, we stopped being so scared of the future. We stopped being scared of each other, and we found our shared purpose. Ileana heard the call too, and in 2028, she ran for office in the first cycle of publicly funded election campaigns. And now she occupies the seat that I once held. I couldn't be more proud of her, a true child of the Green New Deal. When I think back to my first term in Congress, writing that old school
So, what do y'all think of AOC's vision of how we might rise to the occasion of the doom and apocalypse of climate change?
I think she's right. I think there's something that needs to be done about it, and the people that can do something about it need to do something about it.
Mm-hmm. Like, if you have the ability to charge.
We have brilliant minds, capable people. This is America, and we're good at doing things when we put our minds to it. But if you don't put your mind to it and you're lazy about it, like, we can invent machines that'll turn certain byproducts in the air into something else, like good things. But
right, but I think a lot of people might not care about the issue.
They're just why would we put our money into that when we could be making more weapons? Because that's what we need to do with science.
Right.
And that's what it was up against. And the Green New Deal the Green New Deal, which was described in this video as a vision of a decade's worth of legislative efforts, Medicaid for all, a federal jobs program, right? She talked about AmeriCorps in that vision, right? Mm-hmm. AmeriCorps climate, something that kids could, anybody could be doing out of school, get into kind of climate green jobs, start to do the transformation of our infrastructure that cuts all of this being toward the goal of cutting our emission carbons in half, right, in 12 years. But
should it really be a punishment?
What do you mean?
When kids get in trouble, with the police or something, and they make them do community service.
Should that be happening for the companies that are...
I don't think it's good. I mean, if someone makes you see something as a punishment, so cleaning up the earth, if you make it seem like a punishment, then...
They're gonna not.
There's only a select few people that are gonna be yeah, I'll do it. That's your mother telling you to clean your room, and then a little kid being but I don't want to. And if you see it as a way to punish kids, you did this, this, and this. You did wrong, so now you're gonna clean up. Cleaning up trash, I get it. It's supposed to, I guess, make them not want to do whatever they did wrong, but it kind of also they're contradicting themselves in the way that we have this problem, right? Mm-hmm. And I don't really know how to explain it.
No, I mean, I hear you, right? Not wanting to set the paradigm where doing something good for the earth is a punishment,
right?
So it's you don't want to do that. I agree.
So if you're telling them, yep, cleaning up is only a punishment, then
they'll just try their best to
they'll just pick up whatever they're forced to clean up, and then later on in life, they're really not going to care about it. They're going to be I moved on from that. You don't want to do that.
Right.
I mean, I think the case that AOC is making in this video is that a lot of people are looking for skilled work and jobs and good paying labor. And so she's saying, let's have a guaranteed federal income sort of plan where people are getting hired to get trained to be civil engineers, or to be, tech people for solar panels, or to be doing the description of the scientists in the first video we listened to, her job doing that research. So, I was hearing in that sort of a vision of everyone's already kind of on the same page across political parties. The economy sucks. So it's sort of can we use this opportunity maybe for people who aren't even that inspired by the environmental stuff, but inspired by the economic pieces, want new jobs, bring these things together and have a vision for the future that we can all get behind.
Definitely.
But it got super politicized and really sort of, shut down. And there was a lot of fear around the dramatic activities necessary to really cut carbon emissions in half. Because at the end of the day, there are industries who have to change what they're doing and go out.
And they're not willing to change. They're not willing to try because it's all about the money.
Yeah. So I know you had another solution sort of video for us, Emily. You want to introduce that?
Do we have time?
Yeah, we got time. Yeah. Yeah, so this is the most important thing you can do to fight climate change is talk about it. So let's listen to this video.
And then talk about it.
Just how am I supposed to talk about radiative forcing or cloud parameterization in climate models? We don't need to be talking about more science. We've been talking about the science for over 150 years. Did you know that it's been 150 years or more since the 1850s when climate scientists first discovered that digging up and burning coal and gas and oil is producing heat-trapping gases that is wrapping an extra blanket around the planet? That's how long we've known. It's been 50 years since scientists first formally warned a U.S. president of the dangers of a changing climate, and that president was Lyndon B. Johnson. And what's more, the social science has taught us that if people have built their identity on rejecting a certain set of facts, then arguing over those facts is a personal attack. It causes them to dig in deeper, and it digs a trench rather than building a bridge. So if we aren't supposed to talk about more science, or if we don't need to talk about more science, then what should we be talking about? The most important thing to do is, instead of starting up with your head with all the data and facts in our head, to start from the heart. To start by talking about why it matters to us. To begin with genuinely shared values. Are we both parents? Do we live in the same community? Do we enjoy the same outdoor activities? Hiking, biking, fishing, even hunting. Do we care about the economy or national security? For me, one of the most foundational ways I've found to connect with people is through my faith. As a Christian, I believe that God created this incredible planet that we live on and gave us responsibility over every living thing on it. And I furthermore believe that we are to care for and love the least fortunate among us, those who are already suffering the impacts of poverty, hunger, disease, and more. If you don't know what the values are that someone has, have a conversation, get to know them, figure out what makes them tick. And then once we have, all we have to do is connect the dots between the values they already have and why they would care about a changing climate. I truly believe, after thousands of conversations that I've had over the past decade and more, that just about every single person in the world already has the values they need to care about a changing climate. They just haven't connected the dots. And that's what we can do through our conversation with them. The only reason why I care about a changing climate is because of who I already am. I'm a mother, so I care about the future of my child. I live in West Texas, where water is already scarce, and climate change is impacting the availability of that water.
Hola.
Hey, listeners. Mm-hmm. All right. So talking about it, moving from data, moving to the heart.
Right. Mm-hmm. You got to care about it. You right. have to genuinely feel like this is something that you personally or you and other people can change.
Because, like, as she said, it was like, we've already been talking about the science and mm-hmm. people are kind of, like, annoyed with the science part of it. So we have to talk about it.
They're done with numbers.
Right. So we have to talk about it, like, from our perspectives and mm-hmm. our points of view.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And I find, like, feel like find the scale of solution that fits your life, you know, like find mm-hmm. the sweet spot where it feels like you understand what's going on. You have a space to contribute about it. And you're not like losing yourself to like the existential crisis right. of apocalypse doom.
And then there's a set solution mm-hmm. to get all this done.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I think what one of the things that AOC brought up in the video that's important is like, even if we do everything right, like the Green New Deal's flowing and all these things are happening, like. She describes in the future, like, part of mm-hmm. Miami going underwater. Like, you know, even if we're doing all the right things, we still need to, like, also be ready to embrace ourselves for being, I think, resilient and compassionate and caring right, to right. one another in the reality that, like, this is happening, right? Like, there will be, we don't get to stop the negative impacts, you know? We're going to see a ton right. of migration. Mm-hmm. The immigration crisis right now can arguably be tied to climate change on a deeper True. Level. How are we showing up for that with compassion? Not
no,
really.
No.
So I think there's a lot of ways that we as a country can choose to show up for climate change with dignity and with care and with accountability for our, mm-hmm. our role in uh-huh. that. So, cool. All right.
Wow. Yep. So we're coming to the end of our time. Thank you for listening. Catch us next week and every Friday at 6 p.m. on WGXC 90.7 FM and WGXC.org.
If you are 12 to 18 and want to get involved in programming our radio show, join us for radio workshop at the Catskill Youth Clubhouse every Thursday and Fridays at 5 p.m.
And as always, we'll finish with some shout outs. A huge thank you to Wave Farm and WGXC for making this radio program possible, as well, of course, as to Catskill and Hudson Youth Clubhouses and MHA and Kai for making it possible, and RN. Yeah, Kai.
Heck yeah, Kai.
Happy birthday, Soraya.
Yeah, and Sunday, Soraya.
Happy birthday.
Big shout out to Shahi for engineering his first full radio show. Yes. That was a complex program. Lots of audio so clips. That was awesome.
And backup goes to Kingston, who did not lose his cool today.
Yeah.
Good job, Kingston.
I want to give a shout out in the show to the River Keepers, who are a group of activists and advocates who try to keep the Hudson River drinking water clean for all of us, and acknowledge that this past spring, through their work, the people of Catskill were able to really rally and fight a big proposal for a toxic ash dump to be brought into Catskill. And because they organized, because they said no, because they said the risk to our drinking water is not worth it, because the risk of CART cancer in our valley is not worth it, go somewhere else. And they did. So shout out to local activists from Catskill for all of that really hard work.
And just think, it shows that even a small community like us can make a difference.
Yeah, and that project was happening for 3 years. They found out in the last month, and they were able to show up, say what they needed to say, and make a difference. So yeah, shout out to Juice Branch and Relish Delights for their support of this show. Any other shout outs? All right. Shout out to the Earth. To our environment.
Keep going, Earth.
And to everyone who's fighting to keep it
Thanks
clean.
For not dying, Earth.
Yeah.
We don't want post-apocalypse.
Nah. Shout out to Leather Jackets and the Apocalypse.
Yes.
All right. Thank you to our listeners. As always, we appreciate you.
Adios.
Make that change.